Want to finish the story of Moses, which we began 3 weeks ago. Today is the last part of the story, and we want to look at the five questions, or four questions and one objection, that Moses raised to God's call in his life, and consider those things in light of our own service to the Lord as followers of Jesus Christ, as members of a local church, and as people who have been called by God. I want to begin in Exodus chapter 3, starting at verse 10. And as you may recall, we looked last Sunday at the burning bush part of the story. So God has already appeared to Moses in the burning bush and begun to speak to Moses and tell Moses what was to lay ahead of him. And he's kind of bringing all that to a head right now and finalizing everything. And that's what we're going to pick up in Exodus chapter 3, verse 10. Therefore, God says, come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? And God responded, certainly I will be with you, and this shall be a sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship me at this mountain. All right, we know that God called Moses. Stephen attests to that in his historical recounting at his own stoning of Moses' call by God. Moses was saved out of the river, raised in Pharaoh's palace for 40 years. So he lived because of God's gracious care of him. And Moses himself had a strong sense of his own calling. 40 years prior to this burning bush experience, Moses had the idea that the job was his and that he was right for the job, and he attempted to step into the job at that time. But sadly to say, he took matters into his own hands, acted in a prideful way rather than a serving God way, and he ended up doing something that was shameful. And that shameful thing was committing murder. And that's when he had to get out of town, and he spent the next 40 years being trained by God. My guess is mostly to do with his character. Moses was being changed in his character during the second 40 years. And so here God shows up in this burning bush. Moses encounters God. God says, okay, I've heard the cry of my children in Egypt, and Moses, you're my man to go and lead them out. And Moses says, but wait a minute. Who am I that I should go and stand before Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? Because I'm really a nobody. Now, we might think that Moses was out of line for saying this, but I would like to suggest that Moses, who began in a bit of a prideful way, has swung to the other side, and now he's learned humility, and he realizes that he probably shouldn't be the one to be taking Israel out of Egypt. He no longer wanted to rely on himself. He knew he needed to rely on God. He knew that his abilities weren't even enough to get the job done, that God would have to do it. But he also knew that he had a murder rap hanging over his head. And murder was one of the big sins, even in those days. And so I would suggest that he was acting in a humble manner, not a foolish manner, when he said, but wait a minute, God, who am I that I should go? Well, God accepted Moses' humble response, and he came back with one of his own. And if you look at what we just read, you'll see that God countered it by assuring Moses that he, God, would be with Moses. I'll go with you. I'll use you, I'll empower you, I'll cause you to be effective. I will provide everything you need. one of the sermons that has affected me significantly over the years. I heard probably 35 years ago. Actually, I heard it on a tape. I was painting the wall of a building as I listened to the sermon. And the speaker, who was a missionary in South America for many years, was at a missions conference, and he was speaking about service to God. And one of the things he pointed out was that God has the name of Lord, and the word Lord means the one who tells you what to do, but also provides you with everything needed to do the job. That was the type of master you served in Old Testament times. Joseph had a master like that. Potiphar told him what to do, but he provided Joseph everything he needed to get the job done. As you recall, it was in Egypt that the Egyptians turned against that very way of doing things, and they made the Israelites go out and get their own things necessary for building the bricks. The straw, yeah, thanks. There's a word I want, I just can't think of that. The ingredients, that's the word. Yeah, their own ingredients that they needed to build the bricks. But that was a turn away from the common way of ruling over a people. God is our Lord. He tells us what to do, but he also empowers us, equips us, gives us everything necessary to do the job. And so God came back to Moses and said, look, I'll be with you. I'll take care of everything you need to get the job done. And I'm assuming that God was trying to assure Moses that he need not fear his own inability or his history. You know, that's inability, history, that's a side issue. Set it aside and leave it there. And then God went on to say, look, I'll even give you a sign, Moses. After Israel gets out of Egypt and they begin to make their way away from Egypt, they're going to wind up here at this mountain, the very mountain where you're standing here with me, and they will worship me. And so God is saying, look, I'll be with you, and I'm going to give you a sign to assure you that I am with you. Now, we might, as we sit here, think, you know, this is really good. God is just going out of his way for Moses. And I don't want to diminish what God was doing at all, but let's look at it from the human perspective for a moment. Moses is now a humble man, and he realizes that even if God is with him, he really shouldn't be the one for the job. That's what humility is about. There's probably others better equipped. That's how we ought to be thinking as we are humble. And the second side of the human perspective is, that's a nice sign, but when is it going to happen? Not before, but after. As you might recall, Gideon, he wasn't so sure that he should really do what God was asking him, so he asked for a sign from God. Now, did that sign come after Gideon did what God called him to do, or before? It came before. So God said in Gideon's situation, okay, I sympathize with your need for assurance, so I'll give you the sign now per your request. Well, Gideon got the sign, and then what did he do? He said, I need just one more. So God gave him a second sign before he ever started to serve God. Well, what I'd like you to consider is that God was convinced Moses had enough faith to do the job according to God's word and wait for the sign later. Gideon didn't have that faith. Gideon needed that faith. God helped him get the faith by giving them the sign first. Sometimes we want things from God now. God doesn't give it to us. We think God is letting us down. Maybe it's because God knows we already are equipped or prepared, or we have sufficient resources, or we are ready to act on what God is asking us to do right now without anything extra. And we're the ones holding back, not God. So from the human perspective, you know, the sign that God promised Moses was really good. And for a man of faith, this would be a fine sign. Yeah, you know, this is really great. We're going to go down there. We're going to get the Israelites out of Egypt. And on the way across the desert, we're going to stop here and worship you. That, I'm convinced, I'm ready to go. Well, it didn't quite work that way with Moses. Moses wasn't ready to be convinced. And for whatever reason, it seems like Moses wasn't quite ready to trust God's decision that Moses was the man and now was the time. It may be that Moses had gone too far into humility, and I doubt it. I would like to propose that the reason Moses was not moved towards faith and quick obedience was because Moses had a fear that was greater than his faith. And this is pretty common to all human nature. This is not unique to Moses. He wasn't the first and last person to have this difficulty. This is common to the human race, and sadly within the body of Christ as well. And I would say that probable Moses was looking at the things that could go wrong instead of looking at the one who had called him and who would enable him in order to do the task at hand. And as Moses focused on what could go wrong, his fear became greater than his faith. And I'd like you to keep this fear in mind because it's going to continue to crop up. And I would say that if he had any significant fear, within any range of fears, the most significant would be his fear of rejection. He did not want to get back to Egypt and be a failure. He did not want to get back to Egypt and have the Israelites discount him, not listen to him, not pay attention to him. So let's read on, chapter 3, verse 13. Then Moses said to God, "Behold, I am going to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them," so you know, he starts to paint this picture for God. He says, "Look, I'm going to go down to Egypt, and I'm going to stand before the sons of Israel, and I'm going to say to all these people, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. Now, God, they may say to me, well, what is his name? What shall I say to them, God? When they ask me for your name, what am I going to tell them?" God said to Moses, verse 14, "I am who I am. That's my name. I am who I am." And then when God went on to say, "This is what you shall say to the sons of Israel. I am has sent me to you." Okay, you know, this is real nice, good reading. And we all know about the I am name of God. And some of us have studied it. And, you know, it's really appealing to us. And we like all the meaning that's related to it. But put yourself in Moses' place and think about standing in front of these Israelites and saying, "I am sent me to you." Yeah, how about that? Then God went on to say to Moses, "Thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. And I am is my name forever. And this is my memorial name to all generations. Now, Moses, go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has appeared to me saying, I am indeed concerned about you and what has been done to you in Egypt. So I decided that I would bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Amorite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite, to a land flowing with milk and honey." And then notice what God says next. "They will pay heed to what you say." That's a key line. Don't lose track of that thought either. God assures Moses that he'll be listened to. "And you with the elders of Israel will come to the king of Egypt, and you will say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. So now please, let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness, that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. But I know, God says, that the king of Egypt will not let you go, except under compulsion. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all my miracles, which I shall do in the midst of it. And after that, he will let you go. I will grant this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, and it shall be that when you go, you will not go empty-handed. But every woman shall ask of her neighbor and the woman who lives in her house articles of silver and articles of gold and clothing, and you will put them on your sons and daughters. Thus you will plunder the Egyptians. All right, makes a good story. But put yourself in Moses' place, because this is where we are really in everyday life, right in Moses' place. We read the story, and we know all of it that has come true, so we know not just the beginning of the story, but the end. But remember, Moses hasn't seen the end. He's only at the beginning, and the end hasn't worked itself out. So he has to imagine what it's going to look like tomorrow and the next day and the next month and the next year. And so it makes it a bit hard for Moses, and sometimes being asked to do things by God becomes hard for us because we can't imagine just what the outcome will be. Well, Moses not only brought up his first question, who am I, he brings up the second question, if they ask what your name is, what am I going to tell them? My guess is Moses knew God well enough at that point, because as you may well recall, by the time Moses got into the wilderness with the children of Israel, he had what was called the tent of meeting. And he met with God, as it were, face to face. He and God got together in that tent. Joshua sat outside the tent to guard it. Moses went in the tent and met with God. That's a pretty intense relationship. So my guess is, you know, Moses wasn't really hurting for what he's going to say. Moses is trying to help God see that Moses isn't the right guy for the job, and this is probably not the right time, and things just aren't going to work out. There's got to be a better way. Well, God didn't play the game. He came back and said, tell them I am has sent you. All right, you know, that's not really a bad name, but put yourself in Moses' place. He's going back to Egypt. That's a land where there are multiple gods, and they all have names, and none of them are like I am. They're more like David or Mary or Bill or Sally or, right, their names. So you go back to a culture like that, to a society like that, and you show up to a group of people who have been influenced by that culture somewhat, and you say, I am sent me. Not an easy thing to pull off. And you know, I think that God doesn't always make it easy for us. Not because he wants to make it hard, but because he doesn't want to play the game. There are times when we are called by God to do things and we put it off because we're fearful. We're uncertain of the outcome and we don't want to take the risk. And a lot of the uncertainty has to do with rejection. We don't want people to think less of us or to turn us off or to push us away. And so we go back to God and we ask for more, and God doesn't necessarily give us more, and we wonder why. Well, because we're not as sincere as we think we are. And a little self-honesty would help us to see that. And Moses wasn't as sincere at this point as he should have been. And God, in my opinion, did not play along with Moses. But it does seem that God gave Moses further instruction, doesn't he? He just keeps pushing ahead with where he wants Moses to go. And so he tells Moses, now, you know, when you get down here, say these words, do these things, and then he gives God that great promise, and that is that the elders would listen to him. If he would just go to Egypt, he would just say what God told him to say, the people would listen. And he was to start with the elders. And they would listen, and they would influence the people. But he also told Moses, Pharaoh won't listen. So he didn't, you know, give Moses pie-in-the-sky idea of everything's going to be great. But he did give Moses enough assurance for Moses to get off and do the task that was set before him. Now, I want to just stop and make an aside comment here. And I don't want to get into any lengthy discussion of this because I don't have the full answer. And I want to admit that up front, but this is for the discerning reader. And there may be some among us who are discerning readers. It's very possible there might be some of the younger ones among us. But God said to Moses that he was to go tell Pharaoh that they wanted to leave town for how many days? 3. Was that true? No, they were going to leave town forever. So for the discerning reader who's thinking, why would God ask Moses to lie? I just want to tell you that I'm aware that that's part of the story. And I don't have the exact answer. In other words, I can explain what God was doing. He was trying to, you know, make it easier for Pharaoh to say yes. And yet God hardened Pharaoh's heart, which made it harder. So, you know, how does this all fit together? Well, the truth is I don't have the answer. Doesn't make me think any less of God, by the way. It may cause you to do that. I hope it doesn't. But I just want you to know it's part of the story. It's there, and I'm aware of that, and I'm not trying to ignore it. I just don't have the answer to it. So let's move on. Exodus chapter 4, starting at verse 1. So Moses has raised two questions already. Why me? And what am I going to say your name is? Exodus chapter 4, starting at verse 1. Then Moses said, what if they will not believe me or listen to what I say? What did God just got through saying? They will listen. And he comes right back, typical human, comes right back and says, as if he didn't hear a word. Of course, he probably heard so much he couldn't remember it all, right? What if they will not believe me or listen to what I say? For they may say, the Lord has not appeared to you. Well, the Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? And Moses said, a staff. Then God said, throw it on the ground. So he threw it on the ground, and it became a serpent, a snake. And Moses was afraid and fled from it. But the Lord said to Moses, now calm down. Stretch your hand out and grab the snake by the tail. So Moses did. He stretched out his hand and caught it, and it became a staff again in his hand. And God said, this is so they will believe that the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. I will give you this sign. The Lord went on to say, furthermore, put your hand into your coat, inside your shirt, so to speak. So Moses did. And when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous as snow, just white as snow from leprosy. Then God said, put your hand back into your coat again. So he put his hand into his bosom again. And when he took it out of his bosom, behold, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. And so God said, if they will not believe you or heed the witness of the first sign and the second, they may believe the witness of the last sign. Notice the word may. He wasn't giving any guarantees to Moses at this point. He said they may believe. Why would he do that? Well, it's my opinion that God had given Moses enough guarantees already. 80 years of training. A burning bush and the voice of God coming out of it without the bush burning up. The promise of worship at the same mountain once they get out of Egypt. The promise that the elders would listen to him. The foreknowledge that Pharaoh won't. Moses had enough. He had enough to do what God was asking him to do. He didn't need anymore. But God goes on to say, but if they will not even believe these two signs or heed what you say, then you shall take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground, and the water which you take from the Nile will become blood on the dry ground. So here's God. Moses raised this third question. What if they don't believe that I really saw you? What if they don't believe me or listen to me? God said, I'll give you three signs. Miraculous signs. We call them in the New Testament attesting miracles. By the way, Jesus performed many what's called attesting miracles. Healed the sick, raised the dead, cast out demons, gave the blind sight, made the lame walk, turned water to wine, walked on water. Did it make people believe him? It wasn't a real successful method. And I would like to point out that if you look at church history, if you look at the scriptures, attesting miracles are not a guarantee that people will turn in faith towards God. But we sometimes think that really works, don't we? It draws a crowd. In fact, there was 500 men plus women and children at a particular gathering on the other side of the lake one day, and Jesus ended up feeding all of them with 5 loaves and 2 fish. That's a pretty big miracle, isn't it? I mean, imagine that. But did they all believe? No. They came to watch, not to believe. So keep that in mind. Well, Moses isn't finished. God's, I'm thinking God is feeling like he's given Moses everything he needs to give him. It's time to get on with the task. He's just waiting for Moses to say, okay, let's go. Verse 10, chapter 4, then Moses said to the Lord, please, Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither recently nor in time past, nor since you have spoken to your servant, for I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. The Lord said to him, who has made man's mouth? Or who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now then go, and even I will be with your mouth and teach you what you are to say. Moses isn't giving up. Why? Because his fear is greater than his faith. You may not argue with God. You may just ignore him. But if our fear is greater than our faith, we will not do what God is asking us to do. We'll have reasons not to do it. Or we'll just kind of put it out of our mind and pretend we weren't asked. Moses is fighting. Now, we read this portion 2 weeks ago, and as you may recall in Acts chapter 7, verse 22, here's what Stephen said about Moses. Moses was educated in all the learning of the Egyptians, and he was a man of power in words and deeds. So Moses knew how to speak. And if you don't believe this, reread the end of chapter 3 and the first part of chapter 4 and see how well Moses dealt with God. He was speaking real good to God. You know, he wasn't really crossing the line. He wasn't really saying, I'm not going to do it. He avoided all those things. I mean, he knew how to get his point across, which questions to ask, where to bring up things that might, create problems and get the message across to God that he really doesn't think he's the guy for this. And he's doing a pretty good job of it, He's pretty eloquent. And he's showing respect the whole time. Not telling God he's dumb or stupid for asking him or, any of those things. But he does come up with objection number one. This isn't a question, this is a statement. God, I've never been eloquent. And what he's saying is, I not only lack natural ability, but I see myself as having some kind of speech impediment. I've got a handicap here, God. I just can't do it. I'm handicapped. It won't work. And even though Moses' fear was foolish, and we can say that, can't we? Even though it was unfounded and irrational, God just kept right on going and saying, okay, Moses, you know, who gave you the mouth? Come on, let's think about this. He's trying to get Moses to think, trying to get Moses to come of his own free will to the place where he says, okay, God, I'm going to do it. So he just goes this next step and he says, look, who made the mouth? Who makes a person able to speak or unable to speak? Is it not me, God? And he's just like a gentle father with Moses. Why? What does he want? He wants Moses to embrace the call freely, gladly, cheerfully, in faith, eagerly. All right, let's take a moment here and consider some things for ourselves. The ability to communicate the gospel of Jesus Christ in an eloquent manner is not a prerequisite to evangelism. Do you believe that? It's not. It's not a prerequisite to leading a Bible study or teaching or even preaching. Eloquence is not. In fact, the Apostle Paul makes the point in at least 5 places that he avoided eloquence so that the message would not be from the wisdom of man, but in demonstration of the Spirit and the power. How often do we avoid evangelism because we say we don't know what to say, or we can't say it well enough? And as you should know by now, when God assigns a task, he equips and empowers the one to do the task. And not necessarily with eloquence, but with the equipment and the empowerment necessary. So what is the important prerequisite to serving God? It's the call of God. And God calls some people to individual tasks, that's true, but he has called the Church of Jesus Christ in general to the task of building the church. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 1 through 16, go back and read those verses. That's God's call on all of us. And I think it's fair to say that Jesus, at the end of his ministry, calls not only his disciples, but all who read those words, to go and make disciples of all nations. And so we're called to that. If we do not live up to the call, it's most probable we don't, because we don't want to be bothered or because we're afraid. If you offer certain jobs in the church to people that bring praise and so-called human glory, people want those. So we know it isn't for lack of wanting to do something, it's probably for lack of wanting to do what God's asking you to do, or fear of doing what God's asking you to do. And we feed our fears when we focus on all the things that can go wrong rather than on God who has called us. And we feed our fears when we measure our ability to do the job based on our skill level. What skill level did David have in going to fight Goliath measured in light of a soldier? He lacked the skill level. His success was not to be measured by his skill level. It was to be measured by his call and his faithfulness to that call, his willingness to trust God and to go out there and do what needed to be done in the name of God. I mean, he just took a slingshot. There's no, you know, that's not skill with a sword or a spear or any of the things that would be necessary for real battle. And sometimes we go out with just a slingshot in comparison to how well others can talk or present the gospel or argue for the case of Christ or whatever else, but it doesn't matter. It matters that we go out confident of the power of God. That's what counts. So what has God called you to? Well, maybe something specific, and that's good. But possibly the general job, not possibly, really he has, the general job of building the Church of Jesus Christ. And we are participating in that. The men going away and finding security with each other. That's what ought to be happening. There ought to be three secure places in every person's life. God, the home, and the church. And how sad if we lack any of those. Now, given human nature, it's very possible we will. But that's where security ought to be for all of us. It's God's intent. Those should be the three most secure places we have. We should feel equally safe in all of them. So we all have a call, not just to evangelism, to help each other grow, to bear each other's burdens, to walk this path with each other, to encourage each other on, to build each other up, to worship together so we see a greater God this week than we saw last week. This is our call. We have this call. So what are we doing in relation to these calls that we have in our life? The call to pray, the call to encourage. I would encourage you not to take Moses' route. Now, he learned his lesson, and he certainly turned the corner. But at those moments of these questions and this first opposition, first objection, he wasn't acting wisely. Exodus chapter 4, verses 13 through 17, and we'll end with this. Moses said, now notice how eloquent these words are. Please, Lord, now send the messenger by whomever you will. Or in other words, I'm not going. You got to send somebody else. Please, Lord, forget about me. Send somebody else. Well, unfortunately, Moses' fear of rejection kind of pushed God over the top at this point. Then the anger of the Lord burned against Moses. And God said, is there not your brother Aaron the Levite? I know that he speaks fluently. Oh, what's God saying? Look, Moses, you speak perfectly well. Come on, and your brother, he speaks good, he speaks fluently. You do too. And moreover, behold, he's coming out to meet you. When he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. Here's God giving Moses more information that Moses had no clue about. Remember, there's no email, no snail mail, no telephones, no anything to get this information by, except an occasional traveler coming through. And they're a long ways apart, 450 plus miles. Aaron's in Egypt, Moses is in Midian, right? And God's saying, look, he's coming out to meet you. He's going to be happy when he sees you. You are to speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and his mouth, and I will teach you what you are to do. Moreover, he shall speak for you to the people, and he will be as a mouth for you, and you will be as God to him. You shall take in your hand the staff with which you shall perform the signs. Moses went too far, and this time he didn't just object. He said, no, I'm not doing it. And this time God responded differently. no gentleness, no patience. He's angry, and he says, look, I've poured enough into you, 80 years. I've got 80 years of work in you. You're ready. This is just baloney that you're giving me. You can do the job. You're allowing fear to push aside your faith. All right, I'll use Aaron, but I'm not giving up on you. Notice this. He never set Moses aside. Moses had the task of telling Aaron what to say and telling Aaron what they would be doing, and Aaron had the task of communicating that to the people. But Moses had the link with God, and he never lost that. And God wanted to make sure that Moses never lost sight of that. God was going to teach Moses what to do and Moses what to say. And he would be like God to Aaron, Moses said. God said to Moses. And I would suggest that this was a real turning point in Moses' life. It's my opinion that at this moment, Moses realized he'd gone too far. He blew it. And he only blew it one other time. He did not listen to God this time. And a number of years later, he did not listen to God again. And in his anger, he struck the rock instead of speaking to it. And it cost him his life. And it cost him the privilege of going into the promised land. Twice, he didn't listen to God. And I would like to say to all of us, we are foolish not to listen to God. Don't make up what God's saying to you. Don't play that game that just opens the door to the devil. But when God is speaking to you, listen. And listen means not just letting the words strike your ear so you know what they are. Listen means responding in the way God would have you respond. It is costly to disregard God's word to us. Moses returned to his father-in-law, and unlike Jacob, he went to his father-in-law and he said, look, I'm leaving. I'd like to take my wife and kids with me. Jethro blessed him. And Moses got on and did the task that God gave him to do. And the last point I would like to make to all of us is, it doesn't matter how often we've messed up to this moment. What matters is that we have the opportunity to get smart right now. And let us get smart now. If we are headed in the wrong direction in anything, if we are closing our ears to God's voice in anything, if we are resisting God's call in any way, if we are ignoring God's word in any way, and we're aware of that, and we can be aware of that, let us get smart right now and turn the corner, change our course, and move with God. Because that's what Moses did, and it went well. And we should all desire to be as godly as Moses, to know God as well, to experience God's presence like he did. Let's pray together.